My name is Amishka Dhirali. I am 15 years old. Today is May 26th, 2019. I'm speaking with Svetcha Dhirali, who is my sister, and we are recording this interview in Medford, Massachusetts. So, first question, when and where were you born?
I was born December 25th in the year 2000 in Kathmandu, Nepal.
What was it like there?
See, I came to the United States when I was very young with my mom and dad, and you were in mom's stomach at the time. So I don't remember much, but the very faint memories I have involves chickens in the yard, a snake on our uncle's back, lots of smells. I remember because our hometown of Balku is actually a hub in the city of Kathmandu, so there's a lot of street food and restaurants there, so I remember a lot of smells. I remember both my grandparents in like the terrace. I remember being in the terrace a lot. I remember that I had a friend, but I don't remember their name anymore, and that we used to hang out with chickens. And the last memory I have specifically when I was younger is when we were in the airport coming to the United States. I really wanted a lollipop and I cried for one until I got it.
Did you get it?
Yeah.
Do you remember how Nepal looked like?
Yeah, it looked really different from how it looks now because the earthquake in 2015 really, like, broke a lot of the main monuments and temples down there. Our grandparents on our mom's side used to have two houses, one in where my mom's from, Chandargarh or something. But that house is gone, and it's, well, we went back in 2016 and we saw that it's just like four metal walls with a roof now. But the house that I was talking about in Balku, which is where my grandparents now live, is, well, basically it's there's a lot of cracks, but we were fortunate enough to not have that house completely destroyed.
So when did you come to America?
I came to the United States when I was approximately 2.5 years old, in June to July of 2003.
Did you ever go back to Nepal after coming here?
Yes. So I went back twice, one in the year 2006, which was both of our uncle's weddings, because it was a joint wedding. And we went there for like 2 months, so the entire summer. And then I went back recently in 2016 with you and our mom for the whole earthquake thing.
When and what did it look like in 2006?
Oh my gosh. In 2006, it was beautiful because... So I had never been to a wedding prior to that of both my uncles. So they had festivals like the ones that I saw in movies because we grew up watching Bollywood. And so whenever there was a wedding in the TV screen, I was like, oh, that was so pretty. And then in 2006, when like our entire family decorated all these, like the house in Balku, it was beautiful, and then there was, like, a parade and a band in the street, so they would, like, close off the street, and they would have the two wedding parties on the street. It was, all I remember from that was, it was so fun, and so, it was so much food because it was a wedding, so I really liked that as well, and there's a lot of red and gold because those are two colors in Nepal. So, well, there was a lot of, like, colorful clothing. We went to a lot of clothing stores for like clothes like langa and kurta suwal, which is like a custom type of clothing. So it was really pretty. And we went to different like touristy places like temples and retreat areas where there was lambs and goats and chickens. And like we went to the market one time, and Nepal is a really, like, it's a really unique place because, yes, it houses the largest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. And in some parts of it, it's very green. Other parts is very isolated. But in the city, it's really dusty. So I remember our dad had to like buy these masks that we would wear whenever we went to the marketplaces. And I also remember, like, we used to go in Seattle. We lived there for a long time. It's actually where Amishka was born. We went to this shopping place, which is similar to like the Stop and Shop and Market Basket in Boston. It was called Fred Meyer, and we were so accustomed to shopping in like a grocery store that when we went back into Nepal, it was like this marketplace where we had to like exchange different things. There was like people selling fruit and stuff out on the street, and these restaurants that were very miniature and they focused on like one or two, a couple foods. It was so different from the American culture that I had like been accustomed to for that 3 year period, where it was mostly me having Americanized friends versus me in Nepal. So it was, when I went back to Nepal, it was like a new world, or being reintroduced into my old world.
How did you first hear about the Nepali earthquake?
I remember this memory very distinctly, because I remember, the way I remember it is that there was a miniature earthquake in Boston. Like, I was on this very couch where we're sitting right now, and it was like, it shook, and I thought Amishka just like was dancing or something. So I was like, what are you doing, Amishka? And then my dad told me that it was a small earthquake in Boston. And then like the next day or the next couple days, my mom and my dad were in the kitchen sort of talking to my grandmother, and my mom and dad told me that there was an earthquake, blah, blah, blah. Turn on the TV. So I turned on the TV, looked online, and there was like news reports saying that there was a very catastrophic earthquake in Nepal. And my dad started showing me a lot of Facebook videos of what happened. So all of this, I was just like, oh my God, what's happening to our family? Like, is everyone okay? Blah, blah, blah. And so we talked to them. But the way I felt when my mom told me in the kitchen was just like, whoa, what just happened to my grandparents? Like, it was like my heart like sunk in my chest. And it wasn't the most pain I felt, because there have been times where there's like greater tragedy that's happened. But that's one of the moments in my life that I will never really forget.
Going back to Nepal in 2016 after the earthquake, was it the same place you remembered as a child?
No, it was completely different. All these like illustrations I'm painting to you and the colors of red and gold were gone. When we went back to the airport in Nepal, when we came in 2016, it was just like I was looking into a barren desert filled with dust. I didn't really see the greenery or the celebration. All I saw was rubble and like concrete broken in half. There were stray dogs more than ever. Like, I remember there being dogs in Nepal in 2006, but it was just, these dogs were painted with like colors and like kajal and all these things. But then in 2016, all of that changed, because it was just so close to the earthquake. All I saw were broken buildings, people injured, dust, traffic. It was not the same Nepal I remembered.
And it had been a decade since being there, so what was your reaction to seeing all this disaster?
So a lot of the disaster, it was a year after the Nepali earthquake, so a lot of it could have been was contributed to the earthquake and the natural disaster that happened. But when my dad went, like months before the earthquake hit in April of 2015, he went in 2014 in October to December, I think, yeah, October to December, for a holiday called Dasain there. He described Nepal in the same way I remembered it in 2006, because he was there for like festivities and like an organization based in America that's hoping to get citizenships for people who are naturalized in America. Because that like dual citizenship isn't a thing in Nepal. But when he did that, like a family member of ours was married. And so a lot of the pictures that he showed us, it was the same like colors and happiness and emotions that I remembered in 2006. But when I went in 2016, it was like sort of all of that was erased.
Did anything make you feel a certain way while seeing all the disaster?
I think when we went to watch that movie in the central part of Kathmandu, like we went with our cousin's husband and our cousin, and it was like the movie theater was there and it was intact, but when it started raining, like all of the dust in that area just became so muddy and so grotesque. I was just like, I never remembered a Nepal like this. And then when we went like up on that bridge, there was just like, imagine New York City, except with so much dust and so much people who were walking around really injured. And there were a lot of beggars on the street who are just asking for minimal funds to be able to feed their children or feed themselves. So it was just, I never remember Nepal being that way back in 2006.
How are the living conditions for most of the Nepalese people?
We are very fortunate to have, like, our mom's side. Our grandfather is sort of like, he has a job, therefore he's more fortunate than other people in Nepal who don't have jobs. So we have a house in Nepal, and it's not the best house, and it's certainly not like one of those mansions, but it's a house, and it's not what you would determine like a house to be that in the United States, like in Boston. They don't have centralized heating, they don't have AC. It's basically a house that's made of cement and furniture. So I would consider us to be very fortunate in that way. But there are people who used to live like that, used to have mansions, used to have very nice houses, very decorative houses that are now in Nepal, living in 2x2, like very small houses made of like the things that go on ships that are being transported, like those metal thingies. What are they called? I don't know. The metal sheets. And it's like four of them are in a square position, and then there's two that make the roof. And it's, right now, it's really bad. Like, Nepal, before the earthquake, was a third world country. Not a lot of people were very rich. The country isn't rich at all, wasn't rich at all. But then after the earthquake, it seemed like everything had gotten so much worse.
How was seeing your grandparents' living conditions make you feel?
So, with our family, we have one grandfather on our mom's side. My grandfather on my dad's side passed away when my dad got married, like a year after. Then I have one grandmother. No, I have two grandmothers. We have two grandmothers, one on my mom's side and one on my dad's side. And then I also have a step grandmother, because my grandfather on my mom's side is married to two women. So when I went to my mom's side, there was very minimal damage to the house. Like, there were cracks and some concrete on the base of the house was broken, but a lot of the cracks were, they're fixable, right? None of the house, it didn't collapse like what I saw in the other houses. But then when I went to my step-grandmother's house in the place where my mom was raised, the house was completely gone. Like, all the concrete was on the ground. There was my half aunt, because my sister, my mom's half sister, she was living with my step grandmother in that, the four metal pieces of things with two metal things to be the roof, and all of the stuff that was accumulated throughout the house that I remember in 2006 was either broken or stacked up like it was like a storage unit. And then when I visited my grandmother on my father's side, the house, they never really had a house. It was more like a farm, and then they had to sell it. So where my grandmother was living on my dad's side was this like apartment unit, and it was with my uncle. And the way they lived was like, it was a one room type of thing. And they would go to the bathroom at the end of the hallway for this apartment. So just seeing that, it really put in a lot of things into perspective for me, because I used to complain to my dad and my mom about, like, fixing the backyard. Like, we need to start cleaning up the green stuff, this and that. Like, why don't we have this? Why don't we have that? And when I looked at the conditions my family members were living in versus me, I was just like, why? Like, what privilege do I have to be able to live the way that I do in America, where there's heating, where there's AC, where I don't have to stay home? I could go to the library, I could go to different parts of town where there's like amenities for other people, and like social, like public places where there's greenery on all these things and the air is fresh. But my grandparents don't even have that, because if they go outside, like, they could inhale this gust of dust and then have medical problems.
So when we went back to Nepal in 2016, you organized this leadership program presentation to teach the students of Nepal. So what did you teach the students of Nepal, and how many schools did you visit?
So together, I originally planned it, but you really did it with me because I was really scared to do it alone. But basically what we did was, when the earthquake hit, it was like this extreme amount of guilt ran over me. Like, why was I exempted from this amount of pain in Nepal, where so many people lost everything? They lost their families, they lost their houses, they lost their livelihoods, all of it. Why was I exempt from that? And why should I be able to live in America with this life and not do anything to help where I came from? So we talked to our dad and our cousin's husband, our uncle by association, I don't know, our cousin by association, is actually a teacher at several schools in Nepal. And we like talked to him and asked, like, what can we do? Like, is there any, like, relief agencies that we could come work for over the summer? But since we were literally 15 and 13 years old, I don't think that was allowed. So I came up with the idea, like, why don't we just make our own thing? Why don't we just, make our own community organization, to be able to go to Nepal and help in the way we can. So the way I thought of it was, in my freshman year, which was the year the year after the earthquake hit, I did this program called the Leadership Training Institute, and I got this whole packet of, like, what a leader is and how to do community programs, how to present community beneficial projects to people in the government, to people who have high positions in a company that could possibly grant you this amount of money to make your program happen. And so I was like, wait a second, I'm living in the United States and I have this source of information, which I got because an institution ran a program. Why don't I take this piece of information and go back to Nepal, go to as many schools as I can, and teach this amount of information so that they can make a change? Because another problem in Nepal is that the government there is very corrupt. Like, if you think of India's election and how corrupt that is, mirror that to Nepal, which is like a portion of India's population. But in Nepal, there's like over 200 political parties. And recently in 2001, it's not recent, but it's recently, there was a Maoist takeover, which is a terrorist group, then became a political party. So it's like the political place in Nepal is horrible. So I was like, there's no way that the government is going to help institute all these changes that have happened in post-earthquake Nepal, when pre-earthquake Nepal, there wasn't that many changes either. So I made this whole presentation slide, these activities that I learned from the institution, Leadership Institute that I attended in ninth grade, and I translated that into Nepali. And you and I, Mishkin and I, went to 9 schools, teached kindergarten to 12th graders. In each school, what it was to be a leader, what it was to help the community. And it didn't have to be the community of the entirety of Nepal. It just had to be their community. So a couple of ideas that the students came up with was just like, well, we have a lot of problems with garbage disposal. Like, we throw our garbage out in the street and it stinks up the entire town. What could we do with that? And me and my sister helped those people in saying, well, what would you think is a good idea? Where should you put this garbage? Why don't you have a place and allow yourself to talk to other people of that community, in your community, to go and collect all these garbages? Or another problem was water. Like, they need access to clean water, but also to keep the water unpolluted when it starts to rain, or how to grow things in their gardens without the torrential downpour in Nepal, like, killing all their plants. So all these things we worked out with them, and how they could help their communities by basically showing them a maybe 15-20 minute PowerPoint presentation and just allowing them to ask us questions. And so our Nepali, the part about these things is, like, our Nepali is not the greatest. So when we were speaking in Nepali, it was like thick American accent to them, but they completely understood it. And some people were nice about it, and then others are not.
How would you describe the students' energy while we were teaching them?
I don't think that Nepali students are allowed the opportunities we are in America, like field trips, people coming in, talking about careers, being able to talk to people who are in college, or just like having these opportunities to talk to people on things and topics that you want to do. Like, a lot of the people in the United States have jobs, like students, like you and I, and they have like internships, and they can go to companies or different places and get hands-on experience. Nepali students don't have any of this. Like, either it's they work or they go to school. Like, they go to school, they need to get good grades so they can provide for their families. Or they get a job, drop out of school, so they can provide for their families. So having this opportunity of like two students who are Nepali students in America coming back and trying to help them, I think that was really beneficial for not only them, but for me too, because it really put a lot of perspective in, like, what if I didn't come to the United States?
How did you teach the students, and what activities did you do with them?
So the program that I attended basically had these like week by week things that we would do. I basically summarized that and put a little bit of my own mix into it, and saw like, if, since I went through the program already, like, what would I have been benefited more so? So I had a structure of what community was, how to help your community, what things you needed to do. I talked to them about an elevator pitch, like, just in case type of stuff. And then we did a lot of hands-on things, like games, different situations and how to solve those situations. I think they're among all the schools that we went to, the favorite game was the teamwork game, where we'd have different pieces. We would give the same amount of piece of paper to different groups, and the groups would have to work together to build the highest tower when one of them couldn't see anything, one of them couldn't touch anything, and one of them couldn't speak. So that really showed them how they didn't have to do these projects that I'm like talking about or suggesting they should do alone, but that they could work together with their friends, because in Nepal it's like friendships are a lot stronger in Nepal than they are here. Like, I didn't really realize that until 2016, but like, when you're surrounded by so much like massacres and natural disasters and all these things, like, you tend to make your own family, and I think the people in Nepal really, really do that with their friendships.
After this, who reached out to you, and how did you feel?
So after we were doing these things, our mom got a phone call from the president of Nepal, who had recently been elected, and she was the first female president of Nepal, and she wanted to talk to two people who were Nepali, like, by cultural identity and ethnicity, but who were raised in the United States and attended American form of education, and she wanted to meet us and ask us, like, why are we doing this project, like, what what types of things are you learning in America, and what suggestions do you have to help students post-earthquake Nepal? So that was really, really insightful and interesting experience for the both of us.
How did you feel?
I felt empowered. I think the both of us really never saw that coming. Like, we were just going, helping people out, helping, like, I was just trying to get my guilt out. I was trying to raise these weights of, like, guiltiness off my shoulders. But the fact that our small contributions to this whole massacre of the earthquake leading to us meeting the president, that was awesome.
Did you know who the president was before this, and did you know she's a woman?
I knew that Nepal had elected a female president because our dad talked about it a lot. Like, he gets all of his Nepali news from different news websites from Nepal and Facebook, so I had known who she was. I didn't know her full name, but I knew that she was the president of Nepal.
When you met her, what did she tell you?
She was really interested in, like, why we did this project, what prompted us to do this project. She was also interested about our dad because he wasn't there with us. So she asked about, like, what kind of education are we receiving in America? And then after talking about, like, corruption and political corruption, I asked her about her role in Nepal and what she plans on doing to help post-earthquake Nepal. I also noticed that a lot of the jargon she used and the way she spoke was very political. Like, I could tell she was being political. I asked about why there were so many, like, governmental buildings that were very beautiful, like, they were decorated, and why none of those fell and none of them had damage to them, but all of the houses in Nepal, most of the houses in Nepal fell, and what the government's gonna do to rebuild those houses. And she didn't give me an answer. And I think that's the one thing I took away from that meeting. It's just, it goes to show just how much the government does in Nepal for the people. Like, one of the friends that we met of my mom's, who actually works in Qatar based on a work visa and sends money back to his family in Nepal, is saving that money to buy a new house because there's no governmental help in Nepal. Like, in the United States, we have Medicare, we have different public services that the government gives to people who are lower income, and yeah, it's not enough for the people who are raising families. But if you compare that to other countries like that of Nepal, the government here is doing way, way, way more than other countries.
How would you describe Nepal's government and economy, and how do you feel about it?
I feel very strongly about how it needs to very much change. See, I'm only a senior in high school, and I don't know that much about, like, government. I think the only type of governments I've learned is through history classes. I don't know the structure of government or what government were, like, how government... I feel like there's very set definitions for what a government is. Socialism, communism, capitalism, all these policies of economics mixed in with the government. But you never know what's going to happen to it because there's different people who are utilizing these different forms of government and economic policy all at once. So I feel like for me, I have a set view on what a government should be. Like, I think everyone has an opinion of the idealized form of government and what each person has a right to in their life and whatever they want to do. But I don't think that I am educated enough to comment on how like the United States or Japan or Nepal should run their society. I just think that there's basic rights, human rights that people have, like having a shelter, having a home, having healthcare, all these things. And I think that after the earthquake, it really woke up Nepalese Americans and Nepalese whatevers around the earth to say, well, the people in Nepal, our families are not being treated correctly after this earthquake because the government is taking advantage of them.
Do you think the students of Nepal remember you and remember what you taught them?
That's a good question. So this was approximate 3 years ago, I feel like I set in motion a change they could implement, and I gave out my information, and I gave out my email because email is international, so they could reach out to me. I was hoping for a lot of them to reply, but they didn't. Like, the students did not. But the teachers, on the other hand, like, the teachers and principals we talk to, and our cousin who works at these different schools, whenever we talk, like, over Gmail or over Facebook, he, like, tells me that there's the different things that students are doing that he didn't see before. Or, like, the principals, when they gave out the certificates and the, like, appreciation letters, they wrote that they were very appreciative for us to take our time, like, during our summer vacation to be able to talk to students. And these students don't have the mindset of American students to go to college and to do these things. Like, most of them just try to get through high school, or they don't even complete high school because they have to go work. So I think it was beneficial for everyone in the project that we did, for them as well as me. But I think that the main reason I wanted to do it was selfishly to get that guilt out. And I don't think in the moment in 2016 when we did the project, I realized how much of an impact we actually did until we met, like, the president, and until I got those messages back from our cousin and stuff like that.
Do you have any plans on going back to Nepal?
I think right now, since I'm going to college, I think I don't have any plans to go back and re-implement my project as of now. I feel like I would need way more funding than we had in 2016 for actual changes to, like, occur. I do want to go back to Nepal. I just feel like I need to really work for my own education, because, like, college is expensive. So I want to be able to work and pay off my college education and maybe my education further before I really do a lot of changes. Well, before I really want to do a lot of changes, because I feel like you have to establish yourself. You have to help yourself before you can help others. Yeah.
Okay, and my last question is, do you have any regrets about doing this? Or are you really happy that you did it? Or do you have any regrets?
On the educational aspect of Nepal and our whole project, I don't have any regrets on doing this. I do have a regret on not trying to keep in contact with the students more. It was really difficult for us because it was like, I wanted to help them really badly, but there was this voice in the back of my mind that was saying, like, these kids aren't listening to you. Like, there were people who are our age or older than us. Like, I just felt there was a voice in my head saying, these people aren't listening to you. Like, they're not going to listen to you. They're going to laugh at you. They're laughing at you right now. Just these things. So I feel like I would have wanted to make better connections with the students, other than being in, like, this, I'm higher than you, I'm higher than life type of, like, putting myself on a pedestal. I never wanted to put us on a pedestal in front of the students, but I felt like because we were from America, because our cousin really, like, dictated that, it was like we were automatically put on a pedestal, and it was very awkward. I feel like in the future, if we ever did this again, or if someone was to do this again, I feel like, don't say that we're from America. Say that we are not even Nepali. Like, I don't even know. Like, that's the one part I regret, and I don't know how to fix that. But I think that if there was a equal type of stance and viewpoint for the students and for me, I feel like it would have gone way better. But again, I was 15, and I planned this entire thing, so I didn't really think about that. But yeah. I think that was a really good learning experience, and it prompted a lot of what I did, like, in my years after, like, sophomore, junior, and senior year. A lot of the things I want to pursue in college and in my life also had a heavy influence because of my experience in Nepal in 2016.
Okay. Thank you for being a part of this interview.
No problem.